Quarter, and this morning we're continuing on House Bill 5015, the Economic Development Department and Arts Commission and Tourism Commission. Mr. Scott apparently has not arrived yet, and so can we take former Commissioner Mike Lindbergh? Would you like to come forward, please?
Thank you, Senator. I would like to do that.
Senator Hannon, members of the committee, thank you very much for taking the time this early in the morning and every morning really to dedicate to the state. I am now Mike Lindbergh is my name. I'm chair of the Oregon Arts Commission. I've been on the Arts Commission as a nine-member board appointed by the governor to establish policies governing the arts and cultural development across Oregon and manage the arts programs and services. Before being on the Arts Commission, I was on the Portland City Council for 17 years and responsible for arts and culture issues for 10 of those years. I appreciate the opportunity, and one of the things that we wanted to do today is we know that you deal with the broad issues facing Oregon. And what we wanted to do was to show you how arts and culture really connect with a lot of the most important issues that this committee is dealing with. How the arts and culture connect with education, the wholesomeness of our children and families, how they affect community and economic development. And we're going to give you two quick special reports on two initiatives that the legislature has supported in the past, cultural planning and a special youth at risk program, which you initiated in the last session. I might mention that the Arts Commission was established 30 years ago. Up until 1993, it was a separate agency, and now it is part of the Economic Development Department. When it was moved to Economic Development, there were a lot of questions raised about whether that was appropriate. I can say from the standpoint of people throughout the state and the arts and culture community that actually this has been a very positive thing, because what it's allowed us to do is to put arts in connection with things that are happening in communities throughout the entire state. So now we're part of programs and strategies that touch the overall health and vitality of communities, whether it be the economy, trying to rebuild a downtown, whether it be to educate kids or promote tourism. During this biennium, we updated our long-range plan, and one of the things we'll tell you about is that we're trying to develop a lot more partnerships, and successfully so. We developed a mission statement, or vision, which said that we would be a leader and catalyst for the development of a rich, sustainable environment for arts and culture, and that we would work with state arts resources and communities so that arts are really valued throughout all communities and our state, and actually we can recognize how they touch all of our lives. I'd like to start the presentation by introducing, I'd like to just mention the goals that we have, because I think they reflect many of the things that you're dealing with and the broad issues that I mentioned. One is to actually increase the access to arts opportunities in all areas of the state. Another is to improve financial and technical support for artists, develop and support public art projects that enliven public spaces, strengthen partnerships to improve arts programming in all Oregon counties. We're trying to inform people about the value of the arts so we can build support, increase and stabilize funding for arts organizations, which are sort of a fragile state and hang on by a thread. We want to increase arts education opportunities and promote lifelong arts education. So those are the broad issues and our broad goals. And with that, then, I'd like to introduce Chris Darcy, Executive Director of the Arts Commission, who can talk in more detail about the commission programs.
Okay. Welcome, Greg.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Chris Darcy. I'm the Director of the Oregon Arts Commission, and we are one of the seven line items within the department's budget. The work of the Arts Commission continues to be linked to the issues facing Oregonians. For many years, in the 30 years that the Commission has been working in Oregon, we really were focused inward looking at the arts community, working closely with the many strong arts organizations that we have here. I think it was after 1993, when the Commission moved to the Economic Development Department, that we really began looking outward, linking the arts with education issues, community development issues, youth at risk, and other kinds of broad issues facing Oregon. If you look in the tab in your notebook marked Arts, You can see that the Arts Commission has a staff of 5 FTE, all based here in Salem. Our funding comes from 3 sources. We are one of the 2 parts of the department that are funded with general fund dollars. We also receive federal funds from the National Endowment for the Arts. And then we have an other fund element of our budget. These are funds primarily that we collect for the management of the state's 1% for the arts program. A great deal of what we do is to provide grant funding to nonprofit arts organizations, schools, educational partners, and individual artists across the state. And during the this fiscal year in particular, we awarded 153 grants totaling over $1.6 million. We did that through 6 programs that we offer annually, plus the Special Youth at Risk initiative that we'll speak about later. The main thrust of our funding goes to about 80 of the state's medium and large arts organizations. All of our grants are matched. These arts industry development grants, as we call them, provide 1-3% of an arts organization's operating budget. And our program rewards the ability of those groups to generate their own income. So our grant awards are based on a prior year cash income from that group. Overall, it's a small investment of the general fund. Our goal is to be able to increase our support from this 1-3% up to about 5%. State funding to these groups gives them the incentive to help achieve the Commission's broad goals. Many of the larger groups will tour beyond their normal performance areas. All of our grantees are required to provide educational components to their program. Through this grant program, you've got a complete list of these grants in your packet. We're supporting statewide performing arts tours that are undertaken by groups like the Oregon Symphony and Eugene Ballet. We're providing after-school programs, such as the Oregon Ballet Theater's FIND program, called Find and Inspire New Dancers, going into inner-city schools in the metro area to really engage kids with dance. Using technology to deliver the arts to a broad range of Oregonians, the Portland Youth Philharmonic, that's the nation's oldest youth orchestra, is now doing radio broadcasts and distance learning over EdNet. As I mentioned, all of our grants have a strong education component. You know, examples I might cite for you are the Oregon Shakespeare Festival's mentoring programs, internship programs for youth, Tears of Joy Puppet Theater developing curriculum linked to social studies, the Cannon Beach Arts Association new internship program for high school students in Seaside. We support new literature and the analysis of existing work, supporting groups like the Fish Trap Gathering at Wallowa Lake. And basically, we support many activities that make and present the arts in facilities across the state. Ross Ragland Theater in Klamath Falls, Criterion Theater in Medford, Majestic Theater in Corvallis, Pacific Northwest College of Art, Schneider Art Museum, and I'm very pleased that we're supporting this year the Portland Institute of Contemporary Art, which even this morning will dedicate its new facility in the Pearl District. 5 years in the making, something we're all very excited about. These grants not only support the operations of these nonprofit arts groups, but they really bring the community together around the arts. The Commission did an economic impact study of the arts this biennium and reported that the nonprofit arts sector in Oregon sponsored over 10,000 public events this year. During 1998, over $5.8 million in professional volunteer services were contributed into the operations of those organizations. Partnership is really the key to delivering programs for the Arts Commission and with the Arts Commission. And I want to talk about some of the broad policy areas that we are influencing with both our staff time and our services and our grant funding. And one of those is arts education. I think education reform is not a new topic to any of you. And it's been interesting to me as both an arts manager and a mom to see how the arts are really linked to education reform and those new higher standards. Performance tests for history and social studies now include not only your child taking a test, but probably your child drawing a map of the Oregon Trail, or making an oral presentation about the history of Oregon, or drawing a picture to describe some other event. And it makes it all the more important for us to support both arts activities for kids, but also using arts professionals to help train teachers to better meet these standards. The Commission collaborates with a network of 12 regional program providers. We maintain a pretty skeleton staff in our office. This is a very hands-on way to deliver services, great leverage in terms of dollars, and we work with this network of 12 programs that really is on the ground in the regions and understands regional needs and challenges. This program is funded partly with special designated funds from the National Endowment for the Arts. We also realize that one of the ways we can be catalytic is to identify best practices and models. So in the last biennium, we established a new grant program that really awards funding for model projects. It helps us work with a new range of programs. It really helps us reward innovation. And there's some exciting projects. I think one of the most interesting ones is one we have in Beaverton right now, where staff from the Oregon Folklife Program is working with Vos Elementary School using traditional artists to integrate their skills, their expertise, with the ongoing curriculum state benchmarks. The project is not only bringing traditional artists into schools in a community that has a lot of diversity, but developing a toolkit so other schools, Medford, Corvallis, Albany, could replicate that. In Salem, another one of our kind of fun projects is one that is truly multi-generational. There's a summer children's theater program here that's really very well known. They're bringing a playwright in to do a series of playwriting workshops involving not only kids, but probably 50 senior citizens coming from retirement homes in the area. So, you know, I think community building and bringing people together around the arts is a real theme for us. I want to also note that we value the working relationship that we have with the Oregon Department of Education. We have found that their staff dealing with STEM and CAM requirements, as well as professional development of teachers, really support the work that we're doing, and there's a real spirit of collaboration to make sure that all of us are doing as much as we can with these limited resources. One of the Commission's long-term goals, and one that I think is evidenced this session in Senate Bill 725, is the concept of really enhancing the assets of cultural institutions around the state to engage more in the classrooms and train teachers and so on. One of our other primary program areas is in the community development area, and I'm pleased that the Commission has a community development professional working on our staff. We work with a network of 9 regional arts councils. They serve everything from eastern Oregon, 10 counties, 2 counties in southern Oregon, 4 different networks in the Willamette Valley, 1 serving central Oregon. We use this network of regional partners to really deliver information, be our ears and eyes in the regions, help us be where we can't because of our small staff. It's a strong, professionally staffed network, and the Commission really values it. We provide grant funding to each of these regional councils each year. I think one of the other community development area that I am very proud of that the Commission has started is called our Arts Build Communities work. It's a two-pronged initiative really designed to support community collaboration. You know, when I talk about our arts industry development program and the grant funding that we provide to the largest organizations, Oregon Shakespeare, Oregon Symphony, Fish Trap, and so on, we reach a certain number of communities. And even with the outreach that those organizations do, we reach a certain number of communities. But we know that there are smaller communities, places with fewer resources, but places where there is as much potential to develop cultural programming, but there isn't the infrastructure. So we've developed a process where our staff and a team of consultants is available to work in the field, respond to community requests for assistance, and we provide grant funding as well to support these small grassroots arts and cultural activities that really relate to what is happening on the ground in the communities. I mean, the projects are as wide as the issues facing the state. In one called Arts Connect Boardman, a team of artists is being brought in as consultants to help develop a community identity for that community along the freeway. In Bonanza, outside Klamath Falls, we're supporting for the second time an Arts in the Parks project, the first time we've ever invested in that community. In Astoria, with KNUN Radio, we're funding a weekly radio program called Overcast. Must be related to the weather. In Manzanita on the north coast, we've helped develop an arts component at a recycling center, something that's designed to get the community engaged in, and improve their recycling rates. In the Columbia Gorge, we're helping to fund Art Talks, a series of forums designed to use the arts to help promote understanding, help spark conversation about land use and development issues. Some of our projects actually invest in the built environment, and as we'll talk about cultural planning later, I'm pleased that we're working on the design of some historic buildings being adapted into art centers, both in Pendleton with the Art Center at the Carnegie Library and outside Milton Freewater with the Flora School restoration.
Okay, one of the things that Senator Hand members of the committee we talked about was the importance of connecting with local communities, building community, and I'd like to now introduce Mayor Warren Wetters of Lowell, who's now working with our staff on an arts-built community plan. And one of the things I mentioned, in your book, you're going to find these projects listed and how they touch all parts of the state. So with that, I'd like to introduce Mayor Wetters.
Before you do, excuse me, Senator Yee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to know, does the witness need to identify yourself?
He already has.
Oh, he already has.
Yes, and Senator Yee, I'm sorry, I'm Mike Lindberg, and I'm chair of the Oregon Arts Commission. Thank you.
And you're from Portland?
And I'm from Portland.
Oh, yes, Yee. Portland
commissioners. Yeah, there's 9 commissioners, and they are geographically distributed throughout the state. Right.
Welcome, Mr. Mayor, please.
Good morning. I'm Warren Wetters, and I'm here as mayor of Lowell. Lowell's in Eastern Lane County. Our population is about 1,000 now. We've grown quite a bit in the last couple of years. I grew up in Lowell, and I moved back about 15 years ago. We just discovered the Archibald Communities Program about 2 months ago, we think it really offers a lot of opportunities for us. Most of the previous economic development programs that we've been involved in focused on infrastructure, sewer, water, streets, and things like that, and infrastructure is enough to tell your community. We're a timber-dependent community. The annual harvest from National Forest Lands in the Lower Ranger District was 100 million feet when I was going up there. As of the day before yesterday, it was zero because of the lengths. Before the lengths, they had reduced it to about 8 million feet on paper, and they weren't doing that. And that's been devastating for our community in terms of jobs. In the 50s and 60s, they built 3 dams within a mile of Lowell. Creating Dexter Reservoir, Lookout Point Reservoir, and Fall Creek Reservoir, and that flooded all the farmland and all the bean picking jobs, the strawberry picking jobs, and irrigation pipe moving jobs. All those are not available for kids with land underwater. So we're trying to find some way to recover our identity and find something to replace those the industries that we lost. What we have found out. Well, until about 5 years ago, I thought that art was frivolous and didn't have anything to do with putting beans on the table, and I found out that it was wrong, very wrong. We started a festival that we call the Blackberry Jam Festival, which is a family music festival, no drugs or alcohol, and it paid off. We started bringing people into the community. So when I got the bulletin from On Arts Build Communities, I decided maybe I should read it. You can't sell a product if it's poorly packaged, and our product is our community, and it's right now it's really is wrapped in a dirty brown wrapper. A lot of our housing was built by the government as temporary housing for when they were building the dam. And as people have moved out, as they lost their jobs in the woods, the houses haven't been maintained. Our sales staff, which is our community members, they've lost their self-esteem. They're not good at selling the product. And I think this Art Build Community program can turn that all around and give us a sense of pride in the community and encourage people to bring the community up. course, everything that we do in this regard is, well, everything is with volunteers and with donations, and we've had a lot of success, but we're sort of going all different directions, and we need to be able to focus our volunteers and our limited donation resources, and we think that what the Archibald Community Program is going to help us with is what we're calling, for lack of a better term, a cultural plan. And we have four projects that it will focus on. One is we have a park which we developed with volunteers. We have antique logging equipment in. And we have a 5-foot feeler block and a piece of local petrified wood that weighs about half a ton. And we have a covered bridge that we built. And what we'd like to put in there is a statue of a lady that's really important in our community. Her name was Lee Whitlow. And our vision was to do a chainsaw carving, which would sort of capture both the idea that we have a forest product heritage in terms of that it was chainsaw out of carving out of wood. And the idea that it was Mrs. Whitlow would help people who would like to honor her for her contribution to the community. She moved to Lowell in about 1910 with her husband, Al. And a lot of the kids that went to high school lived in logging camps, and they lived with Mrs. Whitlow, put them up so they could go to high school. In fact, she donated the land that her high school was built on. She gave it to the school district so we could have a high school. She kept Liquor by the Drink out of the community personally by telling us that it was part of the deed, that was a condition of the deed to the high school. And I found out last year that wasn't true. But we all believed her. She used to sit on a bench in front of the general store right next to the door, and the former mayor, who's now dead, told me that when he was in his 40s, she would be raiding when he went into the store and telling him I'd be buying any beer. She and Al didn't have any family. They didn't have any kids. And she said that, you know, that we were grandchildren and our folks were her kids. And she was from Texas. And her folks were slaves. They were the only black family in the community. And, we weren't very culturally diverse. And she was a role model for everybody. And I've been trying to figure out some way to honor her. And I think a chainsaw carving of her sitting on that bench, put that in the middle of the park would be a way to do it. Other things, we've got some donations from Weyerhaeuser for interpretive signs for the antique logging equipment. And we would like somebody that knows something about interpretive signs to give some ideas on how to do that. Another thing that we had hoped to do is, we have one of the resources that we have, we've got 5 covered bridges within 5 miles of Lowell. And our dream has been to have a covered bridge museum in Lowell that would help attract outside dollars into the community. And we're hoping that this cultural plan will help us figure out how to do that and how to use our volunteers to accomplish that goal. And a third thing that we're hoping to do is to get young people more involved is make a senior project where the seniors in the high school can go out and interview the older people and gather their stories, and we can archive them both in the high school library and in the volunteer lending library that we have at City Hall. We're really positive about this program, and we think that this will really help us to better utilize our volunteer efforts that we have in the community.
Thank you very much, Mayor.
Thank you. And I want to commend the City of Lowell for recognizing the importance of art. I think that As an example, I recently saw an article where the city of Springfield and the Thurston School is using art funds to express the students' anger, frustration, love, and affection on a play depicting the tragic situation in Springfield. So it's not only being used for economic development, it's being used for therapy, too, for a lot of people, a lot of reasons. And I really want to commend you for participating in that, because I think arts is a way to make sure we don't repeat the past by knowing where we've been. So thank you very much.
And could I ask
Cindy?
A question from Mr. Mayor of Lowell? Excuse my ignorance, where is Lowell? Is it Eastern Oregon?
No, we're on Highway 58 on the way over the Willamette Pass on the west slope of the gas gauge, just as you start up the hill from the Willamette Pass.
Like, yeah, Central Oregon.
Lane County.
Lane County.
East of Eugene.
Oh, east from Eugene.
Mm-hmm.
Another question.
Yes.
You mentioned you have 5 cover bridges near Lowell.
Within 5 miles.
Within 5 miles. So you have quite a treasury of historic sites.
We've been trying to have utilized that. And our problem is one of the bridges is not used. It's been bypassed by the road. So because it's not on the transportation system, we can't maintain it with road fund money. So the reason we started the Blackberry Jam Festival was a way to raise money to maintain that covered ridge. That's really our identity. It sits on the way, right on next to Highway 58, and it's on our logo. We've got it on our volunteer firemen have it on their jackets. But it's all the money has to come from other sources, from what we can raise to maintain it. It's the widest covered bridge in Oregon.
Another question,
yes,
Mr. Chairman. There were covered bridges rehabilitation program for 4 to 6 years. And if you apply for rehabilitating your covered bridges, there were matching funds from the lottery fund in this program. Did you know that you could apply for funds to do it?
Yes, yep, and we just had some luck. In 2 years, we just got a grant to do some of the work on the approaches, and it's going to be really expensive, but we got 2 grants, actually, and there won't be, project won't start for 2 years, but that's really going to help out. And then once that work is done, we've got to find a way to be able to continue to maintain it. We can't count on more grants. We've got to be able to do it on our own, and we think we can do that. If the idea with the covered bridge museum was that it might have retail space associated with it, and then that income would be used to maintain this bridge.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's a real good tourism promotion and preservation of our historic past.
Okay, further questions?
Yes, sir. Thank you both very much.
Okay.
Commissioner Lindbergh, you have someone else now?
Yes, Senator. Chris Darcy is going to just wrap up quickly with three other programs we have, and then we have a panel, and we had our time allocation at 45 minutes.
So sure.
We have a panel from outside the community then. So, Chris.
Thank you, Mike. I want to just talk about the last program area at the Arts Commission, and that is the management of Oregon's public art program. As you can see from your notebook, we have in the other funds revenue source an estimated $164,000 that will be generated by the commission's management of roughly 35 to 40 public art projects. We provide the coordination and the professional expertise and bring together selection committees of building users and so on. The projects range from many on the higher ed campuses to an increasingly large number of smaller renovation projects. I want to talk about two of the new initiatives that the Commission undertook this year. And before I do that, my colleagues from the Economic Development Department wanted me to say for the record that the list of all of the grants that the Commission awarded this fiscal year is not in your notebook, but in your red folder. So those are a list of things that you can look at after this meeting. And I'm also pleased, Mr. Chairman, to say that the Arts Commission did fund the art project associated with the person shootings through our Artsville Communities program. Two of the new initiatives that we worked on this year, though, really, I think, both look at the present and look at the future. We work closely with our statewide cultural partners on the planning of a statewide cultural summit in Portland last year. That work, that collaborative work, which are with our partners in the heritage, history, and humanities areas, resulted in the governor appointing a task force on cultural development. We provided part of the staffing for that task force and some of the administrative support for that. And you can see the executive summary of their recommendations in your red folder. The Arts Commission strongly supports our continued involvement in this process and continued public investment in the process. And we're very interested in looking at ways that we can interconnect our work with that of our cultural partners. We're also extremely supportive of the task force recommendation to look at creating incentives for increased public and private investment and the development of a cultural trust proposed in House Bill 2005. You'll see in your notebooks that one of the budget packages that that's included in the governor's budget for the Arts Commission includes a proposed FTE and $200,000 for the oversight of the task force. House Bill 2005 has now been amended to include that funding, so I would defer to committee staff in terms of providing you with an update on that transfer.
The funding will be deleted from the Economic Development Department's budget and will be and is funded to 2005 and will end up back in their budget again, so it's simply a technical action.
And we will do that in the actual work session, so...
Correct, stripping the funding out.
Out and retaining the slot.
The bill itself is through the House and should be in the Senate shortly, so the funding piece is taken care of.
Okay.
And all I'll be doing is making a technical correction so they don't get twice the funds.
Thank you. Representative Patrick.
Can you tell us what the POP is on the progress board position?
I would have to defer to the progress board on that.
We're going to have, if I might state, we're going to have Mr. Cryan's here for the progress board that could respond to any questions you might have.
I was just wondering why it's tied to the Arts Commission.
I think it's just on the same page.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what you're looking at here is the agency's general fund and the two general fund programs within the agency, excuse me, the Arts Commission and the Progress Board, and the agency has highlighted the Arts Commission as the topic that we're looking at today. If you're looking at the same sheet, the shaded area is what?
Page 6.
On page 6.
Just looking at the left column.
Yeah.
We're not looking at the other column.
Today.
Not today.
Page 6 in the tab.
The tab of art. It's the tab that says art.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Butler. Thank you. Relative to the Arts and Youth at Risk initiative, didn't we have some testimony about that the success of that program? Hasn't there been some testimony offered before this subcommittee relative to some success?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, thank you for. Opening, for giving me the perfect segue to the conclusion of my comments this morning. I would like to report for the record on the Arts Reaching Youth Initiative, which is really one of our major initiatives this biennium. The Arts Commission received a $450,000 special appropriation this biennium to work with the Oregon Department of Education, the Oregon Youth Authority, and the Commission on Children and Families on the development of programs addressing youth at risk issues. And if you look in your red folders, we developed a summary of the program efforts this year, which were really not complete at the time these notebooks were developed. obviously, this is an issue that really touches all of us. It was a real eye-opening experience for me to participate with a working group from these different agencies to look at where the real trouble spots are, where the needs are, and how the arts could really be a tool for social change, a tool for healing, and a tool for education. We learned through issuing a request for proposals that the need for programs in this area is acute. We had set aside in the initial RFP $320,000 to go back out to communities to support community-based collaboration. In that first round, we received $3.2 million in requests, staggering need. We were targeting our dollars to work with high-risk youth and their families in high-risk geographical communities, and we wanted to deal with both community-based and institutionally-based populations. Our goal was to develop some strong model projects both in the community and in newly developing Oregon Youth Authority facilities, which really could show how the arts reach youth at risk. We also wanted to develop a trained cadre of artists and a trained cadre of staff members within the facilities who could carry on this work. We also wanted to be able to solidly document and evaluate the success of the program. And I will say it was a challenge for us to complete all of that work in 2 years. Some of our projects are ongoing. They will be through the summer. We haven't really finished the documentation. We're sending a staff person out to Eastern Oregon next week. And then we'll be looking at the evaluation and assessment at the conclusion of the programming. I think what we've learned are a couple of things. One, there is a strong need for youth prevention programs. I mean, we strongly support the use of our funds, supporting our grantees to help kids stay off the streets, to be engaged after school, and to really be linked with positive mentors in their communities. At the same time, we have found that the arts can be a powerful healing tool for kids within these facilities. Here in Salem, at Hillcrest and McLaren, staff there collaborated with a private nonprofit here in Salem, one of our partners, to bring a writer, Carl Upchurch, into the facility. An ex-felon, somebody who really healed himself through writing, he has been a powerful force to engage kids in writing and really show children how they can turn around even within these facilities. We worked with the Oregon Youth Authority to develop some visual art pieces with kids in all of the new Oregon Youth Authority facilities, and they're now in the tunnel between the public service building and the Capitol. And that's really a first step of getting these kids involved in the project, showing them some reward for good work, and really getting them to focus on things. What I think is interesting is that you can see in the material that we've passed out that the press has captured some of the, urgency of this work, particularly around the work of the Northwest Film Center and the teams of filmmakers that they sent out to primarily Hispanic communities with serious gang problems. So definitely take a look at some of that. And Mike, I think I'm going to turn it back to you to talk about the benchmark.
Before introducing our panel, I just want to mention there's only one benchmark that addresses the arts, and that benchmark measures the annual per capita state appropriation for the arts. Oregon now ranks 49th out of 50 states in this area. In our goal setting through the Congress for the benchmarking, our goal is to meet the mid-range, which is about 25 out of 50 states. The other key parameter is the economic study done. Surprising to many people, there are 20,000 artists and arts workers who make their home here in Oregon. The direct economic impact of their work being $74 million, with a multiplier of $183 million. The employment department in the state did a study showing that the skills that are developed and work in the arts are the ones that are going to be required and desired in the 21st century workforce. And lastly, I would mention the studies undertaken by our partners in tourism, which will be coming up next, there's an increasing emphasis on cultural tourism, the broad definition of culture, not just people to come to go to Symphony and Ballet, but to look at Oregon's history and heritage. And in that area, they're a growing part of the tourism industry, and those that come for that reason stay longer, spend more money.
And you'll hear more about that from our tourism partners. With that, I'd like to introduce, I mentioned probably, yes,
I guess a brief comment question. When I first heard the statistic you just shared with us, that I heard this about a year ago, my heart sunk. I couldn't believe we are that low in per capita spending, this great state, that far behind the rest of the country on something personally important to me, as you know. I'm wondering if you could tell us, if that's just at some point, how much more money would it take to get us to 25? You probably have that figure somewhere. Maybe not now.
And I will get back to it. Except to say, I can say that the goal for a long time has been to get to $1 per person per year per capita in Oregon. Generally, we've been down around 31 cents per capita. Because the legislature funded this little Arts, Reach, and Youth initiative, which has been so successful, we went up for 1 year to 40 cents, I believe. But our goal has been, and we can translate that into actual budget dollars for you and get
I think that'd just be helpful to have out there. We're not obviously going to do anything stellar this session. But I would be curious as to how much that dollar amount would be and whether you and the people in the arts community have thought about the funding source. Are there any targeted funding sources that we could be thinking about over the interim to reach this goal or even better?
I can answer that question because one of the things, fortunately, that the legislature has supported so far this year has been to continue this cultural planning effort. And to be a statewide effort, and as you suggested, we're realistic enough to know that we aren't going to solve this entire problem and make a big jump in 1 year. So what we've talked about is continuing that planning, have one unified state plan with a roadmap over a period of about 5 to 6 years to take us up to that level, which would reach these benchmarks.
Okay.
And we are looking at some outside funding sources, studying what's done in many other states where they haven't just gone to their general fund to get that support for arts and culture.
Senator Yee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Lindbergh, you were talking about statistics in return in investment and jobs created. Could we have those statistics in writing?
Yes.
How many jobs does the commission create? What is the return in investment? And kind of like to know what kind of methodology do you use in encouraging more investment in us commission? Would appreciate that information.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Senator.
I have another question.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman. Do you include the 1% for arts program from public construction investment? Did you include that amount when you talk about we are ranked 49th state in the nation?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, no, we did not.
What, follow-up question.
Yes.
Why not? Because that's quite an investment, 1% from public construction for arts purchase.
I would be happy to calculate what that difference would mean and report back to the committee.
Yes, if you can tell us how much it is per buying room and where does it put us in ranking.
We will do that.
Perfect. Jim Butler?
I appreciate the insight of Senator Yee at that point and recognizing that 1%, but I would also like to know where we stand as a state and contributions privately towards the arts as well. In other words, if New York has a very artsy community and they happen to be number one or number two, and even though Oregon enjoys an artsy community, maybe we don't support it individually as much. And so as long as we're going to find out that Oregon is 49th plus whatever the 1% of the public works project will bring us back up to, I'm going to guess it's going to bring us higher on the list considerably. But if we could find out where our individual contributions are, then we would know perhaps some level of what our personal desire is for the arts as well.
I'd point out to the committee that prior to 1980, and the property tax limitation measures that greater flexibility with general fund money. We're now doing with the Arts Commission what we've been doing for the last several biennia with the State Library, and we were supposed to be up at the 50 cent factor per person in the state of Oregon on the State Library. We have yet to exceed 20 cents. So we're doing the same thing with the arts. It kind of feels good.
Right.
And we damn near break our arms, patting ourselves on the back of what we do do. And it's so minuscule to the overall arts concept. And they could do twice as much. They could solve twice as many problems in communities. Get all these kids tagging all these buildings and freeway entrances and everything. They could actually put the kids out there painting murals and doing something positive. So there's a whole bunch of things we need to look at here. And I personally don't care about the 49th or ranking 49th out of 50, except the fact that it shows you our lack of will to fund it. You can be 49 out of 50, but it's not going to make you feel any better to be 48 out of 50. It just feels good. And that's the only point I'm trying to make is I'm sure you can show us what the 1% that it raises our level up to maybe 42nd out of 50. But it still doesn't release us from our commitment that was made by previous legislatures to the arts. And this is what we need to reaffirm is our commitment to the arts.
Senator, it does lead to the introduction of our panel, because I think Representative's question is really good. What's happening throughout the state is
just right there.
You know, we have to be realistic about we think we should have more state funding, we'd like to, but we need to reach out to the business community and private philanthropy. So I'd like to introduce John Mahan and Kathleen Stevens-Kuhn, representing the Business for Culture and Arts Cultural Advocacy Coalition. I'd like to introduce Larry Harvey, representing the Cultural Advocacy Coalition. And I'd like to say, just as I leave, on private philanthropy you brought up, Oregon is 41st, actually, out of 50 states in overall giving to nonprofits in arts and culture about the same. And there's a major effort, actually, to try to educate our public to be better partners, too. But we're definitely looking at this area and trying to really respond by doing more in that area.
Thank you. Yeah. My hand while they're sending up.
Representative
Butler and the staff, I know, has admonished the testifiers who were looking for philanthropic money that they ought to ask some of us for our bucks. And I know Representative Butler, he's hoping to be a great philanthropist for the arts. So maybe when you're done, you may ask him. He'll feel good that he was asked anyway.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Larry Harvey. I'm here today and appreciate the opportunity visiting on behalf of the Cultural Advocacy Coalition. Many of you have already seen me on any number of occasions in your offices on this particular issue. And in fact, with regard to House Bill 2005, Representative Butler and I have already spent a considerable amount of time together, not only discussing the details of that particular bill, but he and his committee members were very instrumental in making sure that the bill had the clarity that it needed and moved out of the General Government Subcommittee for Ways and Means. So that it is true that that bill is progressing through the system, and we're very appreciative of that. It highlights one of the goals of the 97-99 initiatives. You've heard an abundance of information today, so I would like to take the opportunity at this point to go back to one of the initiatives that I not only personally feel is extremely important, but I know that a number of you have expressed personal interest in this. That has to do with the Arts Reaching Youth Initiative. That was not necessarily included in the recommended budget that came from the governor's office, but I have no knowledge as to why, but that's not really why I'm here this morning. I'm here to underscore not only the significance of that program, but to appeal to you and suggest to you that, in fact,
because of the success of programs such as that. That genuinely, that type of effort genuinely needs to be considered to be added back to the budget. I'm sure in your collective wisdom that there are any number of suggestions or opportunities or ideas where funds could be shifted potentially from one area or another. I'm not going to articulate a numerous different options, but what I do want to suggest is you just received a one-page information sheet printed front to back that not only outlines what the program is, but I want you to please be sure and turn that over, because on the backside it gives you specifics about geographical locations throughout the state, grants that were awarded in those counties and regions throughout the state of Oregon, the programs that they funded, and the types of things that were actually accomplished in the communities from which you come, from and folks that live within your regions that participated in these programs. It is not necessarily something that I would suggest to you should be construed as just another expense from that standpoint. We've heard much today about the comments of the good that these programs do, the economic impact that culture has in this state. I would submit to you that it's probably not coincidental. I would point out, I have my copy here. I'd be happy to either share it or make multiple copies or buy one for everyone or whatever. The June 7th publication of Newsweek magazine goes directly to the heart of the issue that I'm speaking to at this point. And the lead story, which comes from the cover page, talks about investments. Investments in urban communities where, in fact, there are cultural differences and ethnic differences, but the bottom line came down to these are at-risk communities and we should be investing in them rather than ignoring them because the problems don't go away. Now, granted, this particular story focuses, in this case, on the tremendous advances that Black Americans have made, not that they are where they would like to be or where we would like them to be, but the advances that have been made in communities over the last 10 to 15 years in the United States as a result of investments in at-risk communities, at-risk youth, at-risk families, etc. It's a multiple-page article, so obviously I'm not here to read it to you. But the opening statement is Black employment and home ownership are up. Murders and other violent crimes are down. Reading and math proficiency are climbing. Out-of-wedlock births are at their lowest rate in four decades. Fewer Blacks are on welfare than at any point in recent memory in this country. More are in college than at any point in history ever in the United States. And the percentage of Black families living below the poverty line is the lowest that it has been since the Census Bureau actually started keeping those statistics separate. That is not a coincidence. That's not the result of, gee, we're selling more stuff these days, so that must be good for everybody. That is directly the result of investing in our communities and our at-risk youth and giving them options other than being on the streets, being involved in things that are illegal, and having some way for them to express themselves and develop intellectually, socially, and otherwise. And the examples that you have on the back of your sheet is exactly what we're doing here in Oregon. The $450,000 to an individual like me that funded this program is a lot of money. Within the context of any given community, it's probably a lot of money. But if you take a look at the per capita that's being spent on at-risk youth around this state, it is probably one of the wisest investments that this legislative body or the last legislative body could have made because of the problems that it solves and the problems that it might have overcome. How do you measure something that doesn't happen? I have no idea. I can't tell you. I can tell you from personal experience and from experiences that I've had in working with a variety of different folks around this state that when you put someone on the right path, it is untold the problems that are self-corrected because they have a different vision. Culture is who we are, and I refuse to believe that the culture of Oregon is caught up in violent crimes, sexual crimes, drug abuse, and other things that we spend an awful lot of money on. That's not our culture, and we don't want it to be our culture or heritage. I simply would appeal to you that this is a program that is worth your investment in the long term, And without it, it will force investments in areas that we don't want to make it.
Thank you. I would ask you, the rest of the panelists, we have approximately 5 minutes left, and that will be an hour and 5 minutes for arts. And we have tourism yet to do this morning. And I'm not trying to shut you off, but the briefer the better. It will prevent the chairman from having to shut you off at a later time and say, you've exhausted your time frame. So I'll leave it up to your judicious attention.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me introduce myself quickly so you can cut me off as soon as possible.
All right. John, you can leave now.
Appreciate the opportunity. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is John Mangan. I'm Assistant Vice President with Standard Insurance Company. And today I'm speaking on behalf of the Northwest Business Committee, or Committee for Arts and Culture, for their also for their efforts, the Cultural Advocacy Commission, Coalition, and also my personal involvement in several arts groups, including the Oregon College of Art and Craft as the current chair of the board, the Young Audiences of Oregon, and the Oregon Ballet Theater, which employs my spouse and helps with my own economic status quite a bit. I just want to reiterate our support for the OAC budget request. I don't think you can spend better dollars than you're spending here. I think the issue that you've raised several times in your questions is the private investment. Will it follow or does it follow from public investment? And the answer is yes, it follows probably 10 to 1 from the dollars you spend. It's an inspiration and a trigger for private funding for companies like ours that are still based in Oregon. I would point out that Standard is one of those rare entities, a little bit like a covered bridge. We're one of the last financial institutions based in Oregon. We think that's an immeasurable benefit, just the fact that we're here. We think that covered bridge is the same kind of immeasurable impact to small communities, Shakespeare Festival, and other entities in small towns and large towns around the state are magnets for culture, economics, education, history, and cultural cohesion. So when you spend a dollar, you're really going to get $10, and then you're going to get some major impact across the board in Oregon's culture. So I would simply reemphasize that fact and encourage you to increase our investment. Whether we can move up the ranks or not, I agree, is not really that important, but how we compete against our own expectations is important. And right now, we're not performing the way I would like to see us perform, and probably not as well as you'd like to see us perform. And so I'd encourage you to move us up the ranks. Thank you.
John, I want to first of all thank you and Standard. As an agent of Standard, I'm proud to be part of a company that has a strong commitment to the community. The thing I'd respond to by Representative Butler and others on the committee have asked questions, I guess we get in a catch-22. Which comes first, the public commitment and then the private commitment? Because people don't want to invest in something if the commitment is not made in the public sector. It's like we have a bill in this committee we're shortly going to be deliberating with. Deals with Oregon State Fair. We're telling them to go out and sell $30 million worth of private investments to remodel and update the State Fair, or we're going to close it in 2 years. That sends forth the message that if you're XYZ Corporation, you're buying into a building that's due to collapse within 5 years. Do you want to spend millions of dollars of your investment in a program that's going to collapse? This is part of our catch-22 that we're on. And that is the same thing here. We can talk about investments in our youth and our community and the Governor's Oregon Youth Initiative and all these other things. But this is just one element of it. And we need to understand that we have backed away continually on this commitment through the arts from this legislature. It's just not this session. It wasn't last session. It's been going on since 1980 when property tax limitations came into play. Limited general funds started causing everybody to say, let's bleed off state activities to offset the property tax limitations. We've cut state police, we've cut human resources, we've cut the arts, we've cut everything.
IRS.
Now, we're trying to make some of those restorations this session, but this one has been tremendously set back, and 1 million or 2,930,000 is a drop in the bucket on a $14 billion budget.
Mr. Chair, I might just—I know that we're up against time issues, but you know, with and from the tax aspect, coming from that background, with each of the reductions in property tax over the 5 years under Measure 5, with each of the property tax reductions, the state of Oregon actually, well, and 50 is a different issue, but each year the five phased in over a period of the 5 years, 1/5 a year, reducing that down to 1.5% maximum cap. But the state of Oregon, my understanding was, out of that recognized only about $250 million per year of additional income. In other words, the non-deductibility of the fact that people weren't paying the property tax locally translated into higher income tax to the state of Oregon, about $250 million. So over a period of 5 years, the full phase-in would be a little over $1 billion that we've collected an additional income that we will collect annually as additional income tax in exchange for all of the local control and local support for schools, which we previously had. So we've unfortunately gone out and we've traded and received three nickels for each of our quarters, or maybe only two nickels for each of our quarters, but we've got two of something else, and we should be very proud of ourselves. I don't think so.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm Kathleen Stevenson-Kuhn. I work with the Cultural Advocacy Coalition and am representing hundreds of nonprofits in arts, heritage, and humanities today, as well as hundreds of business and community leaders who really care about this issue. The Cultural Advocacy Coalition strongly supports the Oregon Arts Commission's budget as well as the Heritage Commission's budget that I think you've already looked at closely. The advocacy group, however, would want to go on record saying that you could double or triple this budget and just begin to touch the potential of what public funding does to the private nonprofit sector that is currently doing an amazing job. And I want to just take 1 minute to remind you of some other statistics as it relates to the nonprofit industry in this state. Not only does it do amazing things for community, but it compared to its counterparts, it earns more revenue at the box office in the 60-70% rate. Oregon takes the festival more like 90% versus its counterparts that are more at the 45% place. That means the earning gap in Portland and Oregon nonprofits is more in the 30-40%. It has to raise money from the private sector and public sector to meet that gap. It's a smaller gap. And the reason I'm pointing this out is we have nonprofits that run incredibly well. They do so much with so little capital. And with the low public funding and actually the low private support continues to be a problem and puts our nonprofits that do so much at risk. And I want to point that out. And your question, Senator Hannon, is which comes first, private or public? I think they have to go together. The public must step up, and we've seen in Portland when the public, when the city of Portland stepped up, the private stepped up, and vice versa. And so it's a really moving together. Our philanthropy is an issue that is being addressed in the state. It's getting better. It's way better than the public sector. But together we need to move forward. So not only does the Cultural Advocacy Coalition support the Oregon Arts Commission's budget, the governor's budget, we would encourage you to be bold and look at certainly adding the dollars for the at-risk program. But even if you could double this budget and it would be
such a small rounding error, so to speak. So I bring that message up from the people I represent, and thank you very much for all your good questions and your good support.
Thank you. Questions that committee members represent that.
Just a quick comment, I think it plays off some of the truth, but Mr. Chair, when you look back at some of the great lasting artistic contributions in the state, a lot of them were done during the WPA. And, from the obvious, the lodge, of course, sewer line, and some of the road projects that are more artistic roads and buildings and murals throughout the state in high schools. And, you know, that was a time when the public made an intensive investment in people who were essentially at risk. And these were high quality artistic projects that have lasted for now, 60 years. And so I think it behooves us to look at the population who is at risk today and to try and find funding to give them a high-quality experience which may lift them, help lift themselves into a life that is enriched and inspired by artistic accomplishments. So I think we need to figure out a way to fund this program.
Thank you very much
for
being here. If we're ready, we'll move to the Tourism Division. Todd Davidson.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Yee.
While they're coming up, I have a few more questions for International Trade Division. With the Chairman's permission, I'd like to give it to Mr. Scott, so they have a few days to review it.
Mr. Scott, would you come back up, please?
I can hand it to you. Oh, okay. And then I have copies of my questions for committee members. Do you want me to read the questions, or do you
We don't have the time to read all the questions.
Yes.
I think that Mr. Scott looks at the questions that Senator Yee has posed in regards to the Rubicon study and what is being achieved in China. And a report back to the committee, I think, would be totally adequate.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Senator Yee.
Thank you.
Okay. Welcome, Todd.
I hope we will have a chance to review them.
Okay. Welcome, Todd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Todd Davidson, and I have the privilege of serving as the Executive Director of the Oregon Tourism Commission. Mr. Chairman, you mentioned earlier the timing issue and the sake of brevity, and I need to tell you of an unfortunate situation at home a couple of days ago when my 9-year-old son asked me why I wouldn't be able to be at his awards assembly this morning, and I told him I was going to be here with you folks. And he said, well, why can't you just tell him, Dad, that everything's just going fine and just go ahead and give you the money? And I mentioned that you may have a few more questions than that, but for the sake of brevity, I will go ahead and proceed, but I'll keep my son's my son's spirit in mind. I mentioned that it's a privilege to serve as the director of the commission, and I need to tell you that it truly is, because I believe in the power of the tourism industry for the state of Oregon, and I do so for one primary reason. It's that tourism has played and continues to play an incredible role and an important role in the diversification of Oregon's economy. First of all, the impacts are felt statewide. You feel it in the rural areas, and you feel it in the urban areas as well. Secondly, tourism continues to focus on existing businesses. It's a catalyst for economic recovery and economic diversification. And third, tourism in Oregon has continued to see strong, steady growth over the past several years, averaging approximately 6% average annual growth. However, I must point out that over the last couple of years, our growth has slowed to 3-4% annually. In 1998, tourism's economic impact reached $5.2 billion a year. That's a 44% increase since 1991. Tourism employment in 1998 was over 74,000 jobs throughout the state. That's a 20% increase since 1991. And tourism payroll in 1998 broke the billion-dollar barrier, reaching $1.1 billion a year. That's up 57% since 1991. Now, we'll all note that payroll has grown at 3 times the rate of job creation. I think that points out 2 things for us.
Number one, it reflects the maturing of the tourism industry in the state and therefore the better wages that are paid. Secondly, it just overall shows the rising average wage in the tourism industry. The estimated average wages in the tourism industry in 1998 were $22,300 a year. Now, this figure obviously reflects a large number of entry-level positions that are providing first-time employment and job training skills and opportunities for many Oregonians. For many of these jobs are their opportunity for employment or receiving no public assistance. These are also some entry-level jobs that provide flexible employment hours, which is desirable for many workers, including students and working parents. But perhaps most importantly, and many of you are already well aware of this, the tourism industry in Oregon is an industry of entrepreneurs. A study that was done on the wages and salaries of tourism in Oregon showed that over 70% of the businesses in Oregon are sole proprietorships. In other words, the individual that owns the business shows up every morning to unlock the doors and run the business, and their average annual income exceeds $45,000 a year. These figures capture what the mission is of the Oregon Tourism Commission, because our mission is to encourage the economic growth and to enhance the quality of life in Oregon by strengthening the economic impact of tourism throughout the state. We were first established as the Travel Information Section of the Oregon Highway Division. But in 1980, when the gas tax was passed, we joined the Department of Transportation. Then we were transferred to Economic Development in 1983 as the Oregon Tourism Division. However, the Tourism Commission was completely reorganized in 1995 under Senate Bill 354. Under Senate Bill 354, there are 9 members of the Oregon Tourism Commission, 7 that are appointed by the governor and affirmed by the Senate, 1 appointed by the Senate President, and 1 appointed by the Speaker of the House. Perhaps most significantly, though, Senate Bill 354 established a private partnership account for the Oregon tourism industry. And although it is a private partnership account, we have chosen to maintain state-like accounting records within that account so that we have maximum accountability to you and to the people of Oregon. At the same time, however, we've been able to pursue and develop some very innovative partnerships with our industry partners throughout the state. Partnerships in our advertising programs, the state travel guides, matching grant programs, and several others. But I must quickly point out to you that the move to build partnerships within the tourism industry is about far more than just money. To determine our delivery systems and our program of work and to accomplish our mission, the Tourism Commission and the industry participate together in actually mapping out a strategic implementation plan. I'd like to draw your attention to the maroon folders that I passed out earlier this morning. They're underneath the red folders that Chris Darcy and the Arts Commission had passed out. And the top document on the right-hand side is a photocopy of the executive summary of the tourism development plan as laid out by the tourism industry, originally in 1992, but then reevaluated and revamped in 96 as a 5-year development plan. The commission works very closely with the private and the public sector, including the Tourism Industry Council of Oregon, the Oregon Association of Convention and Visitor Bureaus, the Oregon Snow Sports Industry Association, Lodging Association, Restaurant Association, the Arts Commission, Heritage Commission, and several others. But we also coordinate our programs with the Oregon Economic Development Department's program, the U.S. Forest Service, Bureau of Land Management, the Federal Economic Development Agency, the Oregon Department of Agriculture, and several others. There are key programs that reside within each of these agencies that directly benefit tourism development and marketing programs also. For example, the Oregon Economic Development Department's Regional Investment Fund makes investments that have given Oregon such significant developments in its tourism industry as the Oregon Convention Center, the Oregon Coast Aquarium, and the Oregon Trail Interpretive Centers. Now, I mentioned that the first strategic plan for the tourism industry was mapped out in 1992 as a 5-year plan. And in 96, we reevaluated that plan and remapped out the next plan through the year 2001. From this plan, we derived the Oregon Tourism Commission's marketing plan. And that's the second document included in the maroon folder for you. What I'd like to do at this time is just quickly review this marketing plan, pulling out the key programs and partnership opportunities for you. Probably the program the Tourism Commission is best known for is the media advertising program. We focus on marketing Oregon as a brand and as a tourism destination. By projecting a positive image of Oregon, however, obviously other industries benefit as well. I've included copies of some of our most recent advertising in the packet as well. They're in the back of the left-hand side for you. There are actually 8 different ads in this series. I've included 4 just so you can have a sense of the kinds of advertising we're doing for the state of Oregon. We're targeting visitors very deliberately who will spend more money while they're here in Oregon. Not more visitors, more dollars, because it's the dollars that are driving the economy. The second program we're also very well known for is the publications program. I've incorporated also a copy of the most recent official Oregon State Travel Guide in the back of the right-hand section of that maroon folder for your review as well. The State Travel Guide was once completely publicly funded. However, now over half of the dollars that to produce the Oregon Travel Guide come from the private sector. Likewise, the first Oregon Tourism website was a partnership with several Southern Oregon counties, businesses, and the commission. The site was launched in mid-February of 1996, and it will be completely revamped and relaunched again this summer with one of the most innovative developments on the web. What we're doing is we're working in partnership with several of the statewide trade associations like the Lodging Association, Restaurant Association, Oregon Guides and Packers, and Oregon Festivals and Events to take their databases and use them as content on our website so that when you hit traveloregon.com and you see all that Oregon has to offer, and you're prepared to ask the question of, where could I stay? Where could I eat? Is there somebody that could provide me a guided fishing experience? Is there a festival or event that's occurring that weekend I'm considering coming to Oregon? That information will be more readily available for you. Well, it's one thing to have a good advertising program and another to have strong collateral materials to follow up with. But if you don't have a good fulfillment program, if I don't get my materials back into your hands quickly, you're going to forget why you called by the time the material arrives. So we focus a lot of energy on our fulfillment program. We respond to over 300,000 visitor inquiries every year. And I'm proud to tell you that we have been nationally recognized for having one of the fastest fulfillment rates in the country. Unbeknownst to any of the state tourism offices, Louisiana State University decided to do a study a couple of years ago, and they sent postcards out to each of the 50 state tourism offices. They started the clock running when the postcards hit the mailbox in Louisiana. Now, we did enough geography in high school to know that Oregon's already at a competitive disadvantage when the mail's got to get from Louisiana out to Oregon and back again. However, Oregon's fulfillment rate came in 3rd in the country. The best rate was 7 days. Oregon came in at 8. And I'm very, very proud of that figure for the state of Oregon because I believe that information first seen is usually first bought. Likewise, as part of the revamping of the website that I mentioned earlier, our partners throughout the state will very soon be able to go out and download the leads off the Internet rather than need to wait for any delay in having the leads mailed to them that they would be interested in. They can go out that day and download leads that came in from our advertising campaigns and be able to fulfill them within 24 hours of the time they actually called our office seeking information. We think that's going to be a real boon to Oregon's tourism programs. We also operate a public relations program. We work with the media to secure what many would call free Oregon exposure for our very limited advertising dollars. The commission develops press kits and manages the slide file, hosts travel writers, and coordinates media trips so that we can maximize the marketing potential of editorial and broadcast media. We operate an international marketing program, which I believe is in its infancy, but is a critically important program for the state of Oregon. The commission actively targets primary markets throughout the world, and our investment in international marketing is actually matched dollar for dollar by the private sector, by them providing complimentary lodging, meals, or tours, or paying to participate with us in travel shows and on trade missions. We also operate a rural tourism development program, and we are one of the few state tourism offices that actually has individuals on staff that focus on the development of the tourism industry in the state. We're providing technical assistance to rural communities that are looking to diversify their economy through tourism. And we focus on developing niche markets, special interest markets that are good for Oregon in both the short and the long term. We've launched a very aggressive quality service initiative where we're assisting communities in training their hospitality workforce and also enhancing the information that they provide so that they can better serve visitors. And of course, in the idea of niche markets and heritage tourism, there's no doubt that the Lewis and Clark Bicentennial marks one of the most significant events in Oregon history and one of the most significant opportunities for Oregon tourism, given the tremendous media attention it's already received. The Tourism Commission also operates 8 state border welcome centers that greet over 500,000 visitors a year. We conduct market research programs, doing visitor profiles, looking at group tour markets, and doing the economic impact analysis. We also do programs, research programs, that directly evaluate our own programs, ad conversion work, welcome center research programs, and the like, so that we're able to come back to you and tell you how our programs are performing in the state. But also, as importantly, make sure that we're investing those dollars in the right publications, that we're advertising and reaching the right folks. Well, I'm pleased to report to you that in carrying out their programs, the Tourism Commission has leveraged nearly $4 million in cash and in-kind support since the development of Senate Bill 354. Nearly $2.8 million has been in leveraged cash partnerships with our industry, and $1 million has been in leveraged in-kind partnerships. Those leveraged cash partnerships of $2.8 million have doubled since Senate Bill 354 was passed in 1995. Let me just give you a few examples of what I mean when I talk about a leveraged cash partnership, because I'm referencing a partnership that exists because a certain program exists. There's been discussion about which comes first, kind of the chicken and egg scenario. Well, because the Tourism Commission produces an official Oregon travel guide, we've created an opportunity for our partners throughout the state to be able to advertise their products. It's through that advertising support and partnership that we're able to now cover half the cost of the travel guide in its production. However, we've limited the size and the number of ads available in here so we don't compromise the integrity of our collateral pieces. Likewise, we've developed a regional cooperative advertising program. The ads that I included in the packet for you, several of those are examples of the regional cooperative advertising that's taking place. A regional marketing group can come to the Tourism Commission and say, we would like to partner with you to leverage our limited advertising budgets with yours. The minimum buy-in for a region is $25,000. We will match that dollar for dollar for $25,000, and we will develop an ad that sells the state but is specific to their region. Other examples include our matching grant program. In past years, we've had $50,000 roughly to allocate for our matching grant program. But because of a partnership with the USDA Forest Service, we've been able to allocate during the last biennium $250,000 in matching grants. And although the required match for that program is only 1-to-1, we're experiencing at least 3-to-1 return. So our $50,000 investment is generating a $1 million grant program for the state of Oregon. The final example I have of a leveraged partnership opportunity is the German-speaking marketing program. We needed to be able to better penetrate the German-speaking markets of Germany, Austria, and Switzerland because we knew they were key markets and primary targets for the state of Oregon. So the commission hired marketing and media relation representatives in Germany. What's important is to note is that we did this not only with the support of the Port of Portland, the Lincoln City Convention and Visitor Bureau, the Convention and Visitor Association of Lane County, but we also did it with the partnership of the state of Washington. Now, many may find it odd that we are partnering with what many would consider a competitor. However, Europeans travel to experience a region. So it made sense to us, both fiscally as well as psychologically in the mind of the consumer, that we should come together and market the Pacific Northwest. And it's a program that's been very successful for us. In fact, the results of these programs and partnerships are very impressive. Our advertising and marketing programs have won numerous awards. In fact, many of those have been national awards and recognitions that have been given to us. In 1995 and again in 1998, the official Oregon Travel Guide has been selected as the best travel guide in the country. In 1996, our advertising campaigns were selected for national recognition by the National Council of State Travel Directors. But perhaps more importantly than those kinds of accolades, independent research shows that our programs are working for Oregon's economy. For every $1.22 we spend in placing those ads that I put in your package this morning, we are able to generate one new incremental trip to the state of Oregon, a trip that would not have occurred otherwise. That's what the visitors have told us. The $500,000 that the commission invested in advertising this past year has resulted in generating 402,000 new trips to the state of Oregon and $44.6 million in new visitor expenditures. Similarly, that same $1.22 generates $3 in state tax revenue and $1 in local tax revenue. the entire tourism industry is just kind of a point of interest for you. The entire tourism industry in the state of Oregon, not just that that's generated by the Tourism Commission's programs, but the entire industry as a whole, generates $200 million in state and local tax revenues annually, including 20% of Oregon's highway gas taxes. Likewise, for every dollar we spend operating state welcome centers, 41 new dollars are being spent in the state of Oregon. Currently, Oregon's investing a dollar per Oregonian per year in their tourism marketing programs. Visitors, in return, are generating $1,571 per Oregonian per year. The public relations and media relations programs that I mentioned earlier have resulted in editorial coverage of Oregon just over the last year, a total circulation of over 78 million people, and a paid advertising value of $3.2 million. That's what it would cost the Tourism Commission to be able to go out and buy the space that we've received in national magazines, newspapers, and broadcast media. Had I had to buy it as advertising, instead we received it as editorial. Finally, by focusing on the international markets with the greatest potential, the number of overseas visitors to Oregon has increased 41% since 1991. We now have over 260,000 overseas visitors traveling to Oregon annually. So in conclusion, let me say this. Tourism is working for Oregon, and the Oregon Tourism Commission is working for Oregon's tourism industry. And state government's role in developing and growing this industry is crucial if we're going to continue to be as successful as we have been in these very changing and increasingly competitive times. With the commission, with the committee's pleasure and the chairman's blessing, I'd like to at this time invite two of our partners to join me to present some testimony, and then I would be happy to remain and answer questions for the committee.
Okay. Are there any questions for me?
We have caucus in 5 minutes. I appreciate an opportunity to ask a few questions. Well, I appreciate your presentation, Mr. Davidson. And you have given us statistics on the visitors industry. Is it possible for you to make it more specific so we know how many jobs are created with the money we invested in 97-99, $5,831,271? How many jobs are created? What's the cost per job? What is the return in investment? That means we put in this much money. What is the state tax dollars coming back, and how much federal tax dollars coming back? And what kind of criteria do you use to recommend more investment? Would appreciate that information.
I would be happy to do that for you, Senator. We do have that information laid out so that we can talk about the additional dollars invested, the jobs created, the tax revenue that's generated, the additional visitor expenditures that are generated. And I would be pleased to provide that information to you. Yes.
Another question?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I see that you are recommending one more FTE to increase the effectiveness of Asian tourism marketing activities. Now, Asian countries are facing a lot of financial crisis. So why are you hiring one more person to encourage more tourism when their financial status is declining?
The answer to that question is twofold, Senator. Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, what we have found is that, first of all, by hiring an additional person for the Asian market, we're able to basically take the international program position. We have one person now that sells Oregon to the world. We need to, because of the increasing demands globally, be able to divide that individual. So we have an individual that's covering primary European markets and another one covering primary Asian markets. That's our objective. We feel that that will make us more successful and more efficient in both arenas. You're right that the economy in Asia has been very sluggish lately. However, yes. However, at the same time, we have seen new air service going to Japan, and we need to have individuals to support that air service because the economy will recover, and when it does, we want to make sure that we still have the new air service into Fukuoka, Japan. that additional codeshare agreements that some of the airlines are having with some of the Chinese airlines, some of the Korean airlines, and others are able to move forward as well. When the economy is as sluggish as it is, and we believe that it will recover, and all indications are that the economy in the Asian area will recover, this is actually a very cost-effective time for us to be able to be in the marketplace because costs are fairly depressed. It's cheaper for us to be in Japan marketing right now than it's ever been. Over the time that I've been traveling to Japan selling Oregon, I've seen the yen go from 100 to 1 to 85 to 1, and then our last mission, it was up to 120 to 1. So in some ways, it was 20 to 40% cheaper for us to be able to go over there now, buy advertising, and do some promotion, so that when the economy recovers, we're able to have some positioning with them. So in essence, we're actually taking advantage of a depressed economy and a higher return on investment for us because we have a better exchange rate.
Okay. Well, I just want to say when the economy is depressed, they don't have money to travel for tourism, for pleasure, maybe for work, but not for tourism.
Sometimes we can get to that and hopefully maybe in the work session, but Todd, it would be helpful if you were to respond to Senator Yee's questions, perhaps in writing with the information you indicated you might have.
Gladly.
Further questions? If not, you want to call a group of individuals.
If I could, there are two individuals that would like to address the committee this morning. First, I'd like to introduce to you Mr. Guy DeTorres. Guy is the director of the Oregon Coast Visitors Association and the Central Oregon Coast Association. Joining him is Ms. Jean Kurtz. Jean is the director of the Roseburg Visitor and Convention Bureau and also the president of the Southern Oregon Visitors Association. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Senator. Good morning. Glad to be here and to represent one of the rural areas of Oregon's tourism industry. As Todd indicated, I represent the Oregon Coast Visitors Association. It's a two-year-old regional destination marketing organization in the state. We're the youngest region. We're the last one to form. And I wanted to let you know a couple of reasons why the state tourism operation and its budget is important to us out in the sticks. First of all, what state tourism programs bring to us is a sense of structure. Most of the rural areas don't have the staffing, they don't have the sophistication, nor do they have the resources afforded to them to allow them to put together strategic marketing programs, strategic planning, or to be targeting their efforts, whether it's in advertising or trying to get visitors to come here. One of the things I've told a lot of people at my commissioner meetings on the coast is that take away all the chambers of commerce, take away all of Oregon tourism, and we still have bumper-to-bumper traffic on the coast from the 4th of July to Labor Day. Unfortunately, that makes us a very seasonal business and doesn't have an economic impact that's positive on the coastal regions. What's very, very important is to have a structured, symphonically led, with a SOAR program that is brought to you by state tourism, having a strategic plan that is marketing the entire state, bringing visitors here year-round. We've got to do that in the Oregon coast, and the only way we can do it and afford it is working with some sort of statewide organization or mechanism. State tourism brings affordability to the communities and the counties on the Oregon coast who want to market themselves year-round and go after that type of an economy. It transcends industry boundaries. We're able to bring retail shop owners, restaurant owners, hotel, motel managers, and vacation rental brokers to the table together. It's not strictly a single industry-run organization. And the state tourism department allows you to transcend individual industry agendas and to present the coastal product, if you will, on a national basis in a competitive way. It brings involvement. All the players are at the table. We're all working together. It also brings advocacy. I handed out to you the Pacific Coast Scenic Byway Guide. When ODOT was putting together the application to the feds for the Scenic Byway 2 years ago, part of their application included a mock-up of a brochure that would promote Oregon's coastal designation of the Scenic Byway. It was a state tourism staff person who approached ODOT and said, if we're going to do this mock-up brochure to present the application, why don't we go ahead, put a little money into printing a real brochure, and get it out to the coast to help promote the coastal markets. This became a gift from ODOT
to the Oregon Coast Visitors Association at its first birthday, where we're able to have a nice four-color brochure that when a visitor calls our office or calls the State of Oregon toll-free line or accesses us via the Internet, we're able to give them a full-color piece that helps us compete on very much an even playing field with other communities that are marketing their regions around the United States. That advocacy wouldn't have existed if Janet Porter from State Tourism Staff hadn't been there to represent the total industry. So it might have been one city, one county, one industry. Partnerships. The match grant program that Todd referred to also allowed us to apply for a match grant a year ago to get postage money to mail this out at a time when the organization, being brand new, didn't have much of a budget. We sent out 80,000 of these with the money that was provided to us by the state and matched by our members. And now we're in the process of getting a reprint done, again funded by ODOT, where I'm getting inventory enough to, you know, handle 200,000 plus responses this next year with a nice four-color piece. We also need to mature the industry on the Oregon coast. We're very much a rural industry. There are no centralized toll-free lines like you have in Portland to make reservations or when you want to go to the Ashland area. There's no centralized organized structure outside of our toll-free lines and the cooperative efforts that we bring to the table. Having the rural tourism workshops that the state of Oregon puts on through the tourism division allows us the opportunity to educate ourselves and, again, keep us active at the table in the market. It brings us measures between the Runyon studies that track the economic impact of tourism by counties. Many counties on the Oregon coast can't afford to hire an organization to do that kind of research. The state then brings us these measures that we can look at and see when are visitors coming, what are they spending, how are they getting here, from what parts of the country are they coming here, and what sort of positive economic impact are they bringing to us. Second, the last area is continuity. Having a state staff, having a state-operated program, we've got that month-to-month annual continuity that occurs that we might not get with a changing of the guard of officers or a board of directors for an organization that might decide one year to promote bus tours, the next year to go after corporate business, the third year go after the RVs. It keeps us very much focused, again, on a developed structure through the plan. And lastly, I can tell you we bring results. In Lincoln County alone, and so you know, my job is funded by room tax dollars. I'm not a guaranteed line item at the county. The money comes in, I get a percentage of it. If it doesn't come in, my budget gets cut. I've not had a budget cut in my 3 years I've been there. We keep bringing in tourists. And in Lincoln County alone, your second smallest county on the Oregon coast, we generate just over $4 million in transient room tax dollars. Most of that money goes into general funds of cities to fund parks, police, libraries, and in the county it funds the assessor's office, the surveyor's office, and the commissioner's office. So we're making a contribution in a very positive way because we have a program that allows us to keep things affordable. One last point, and then I'll pass it on to Gene. I can't afford with my budget. I have a $95,000 budget. I can't afford to buy national or regional advertising. If I want to enter the national market to get those visitors calling my 800 number, getting to my website, getting this brochure, I need to co-op it. The state of Oregon provides twice a year co-op campaigns, one in the fall when I sorely need the off-season leads, one pre-summer so I can pre-sell my summer. If I did not have access to that state cooperative advertising, I would not be able to advertise the Oregon coast nationally. In addition, it allows communities the size of Gold Beach, Astoria, Brookings Harbor to have a presence nationally and regionally in the tourism promotion market that they can't afford on their own. It's one big, if you will, farmers co-op where we've got the buying power working together with the state. Without the state being there, we have to do it locally, and I can tell you from organizing the group on the local level, the best we'll do this year is a $100,000 budget with the coastal organization. I can leverage that $100,000 into $250,000 of national and regional advertising to promote Oregon's coastal product year-round. If it's not there, it wouldn't happen. That's the dollar and cent one, and we too, Senator, tracked the employment one. In Lincoln County last year, we picked up 50 new year-round jobs in visitor-related industries in our county. That's from January to December, we went plus 50 people. We're going to get through this first quarter of this year because it was a killer on the coast. and we're looking for a summer that's going to be a genuine killer. Don't drive over Friday afternoons, okay? Leave earlier, come Thursday. But without state tourism programs, I wouldn't have that structure, and I wouldn't have access to markets that are available to me now. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Senator Yee has to excuse or attend the caucus meeting, so we'll continue. Welcome to the committee.
Yeah. Good morning. My name is Jean. I'm from Roseburg. I'm the state director of the Roseburg Visitor and Convention Bureau. I also represent SOVA, which is the Southern Oregon Visitor Association. I'm president this year. And also I'm on the board of the Oregon Association of Visitor and Convention Bureaus. And I'm here to testify on the importance of the Oregon Tourism Commission and how it's enhanced our efforts in marketing our area for tourism. Roseburg is a city of 20,000 people, another timber city that has had to diversify its economy, and they've really set out that tourism is one of our key components for the future. As we have developed our marketing plans, whatever, we've been able to contact the staff at the State Office for Statistical Information to make cases for tourism in our area and the importance of it. Recently, last year, we built a new visitor center, state-of-the-art visitor center. It was built with business dollars and local contributions. We were able to receive regional strategies monies to help build this $650,000 visitor center. It has doubled the number of visitors year-to-date that we had compared to last year. Well, in preparing grants, you know, it takes a lot of those statistics of the impact of visitors. We in our small city can't afford those kinds of reports, and we look to the state for those that kind of information and helps us prepare our grants, and we did receive $48,000 towards an engineering study for our new building. So this is made possible through the services that we are provided through the state. We've also been able to participate in the educational programs that the state brings out to the rural communities. Recently was the Rural Tourism Workshop, where local outfitters, wineries, some of these small tourism industries can participate in an educational workshop right in their own county. And that's a real asset. Annually, the state hosts the tourism conference, another opportunity for about 400 people from around the state to come network together and learn more about tourism and what the state's doing and how we can glean from their expertise. Very critical and very important to the rural communities. Alone, we cannot afford it, and it helps us also have a bigger focus on what's happening in tourism at the state level and in the world level and how we fit into that. They also lay out a good example for us on marketing skills and marketing products, and tourism in the rural areas is really critical, and they help those of us that are standing alone with our small budgets to do a bigger and better job. We've been able to partner with the state in advertising. We participate in the state travel guide. We're proud to be partners in a recognized publication that goes out, and that's where we get some of our greatest leads as far as people writing in, calling in on our 800 number, and wanting to hear about Roseburg and our area in Southern Oregon. We also are fortunate enough to be on the Scenic Byway program for the Rogue-Umpqua Highway. Again, a nice brochure has been published from the state, brings recognition into our area, access to Crater Lake. It's wonderful for us to be partners with the state and have part of the bigger pie. We also have partnered with them recently in an ad about the Volcanic Legacy, which was published in the Southern Oregon Southern California magazine. Alone, we could not have done that, afford that in any way. But we partnered with Plymouth County and ourselves, and Medford also partnered in that, so we could be in that regional magazine in a bigger, better way than we ever could alone. We are a community that participated in the Quality Service Initiative program. This is a program that the state has started. It helps us take inventory or audit our own visitor industry services, and helps us improve our product. It is an ongoing process. It's a privilege to be a part of that program, and the state has developed it for us, and we're partnering with that. The state staff helps lead us through the process, and we started in 98 and we're continuing in 99 to take a look at Roseburg and how we can better service the visitors. Again, they have a good time, a positive time,
they can find our products through signage and what have you, then we improve tourism at the rural level. And this is a program started from the state level, and it's helping us to do a better job with our product. I think that I'm proud to be a part of the tourism industry. Again, on my own, myself and a part-time assistant, we couldn't do it alone. And being able to pick up the phone and access quality staff, helpful staff at the state level, has helped us do a better job in marketing tourism in our rural community. And like I said, our community has taken tourism seriously. Businesses, our county contributed to our new visitor center. Our transient room tax put in $150,000 towards the building of a new visitor center, and it's really important to us that tourism is a part of economic development. We actually have two businesses in our area that have relocated because of tourism. They like the fly fishing on the South Umpqua River, those people in the decision-making factors. So Alcan Cable and an electrical company have both relocated to our area and helped diversify our economy. So if they hadn't heard about the great fishing along the Umpqua River, perhaps we wouldn't have those two businesses. But it's made possible by marketing in a bigger part of the pie through the state. And also, as we've done educational things in our local community, we host an annual visitor industry recognition luncheon, as we have a symposium in Southern Oregon Visitor Association, educational opportunities. The state staff comes down and participates with us and gives us that credibility as we try to reach out to the small businesses in rural Oregon to help them do a better job. And Todd has come many times to participate and be our keynote speaker, and we've truly appreciated that. I thank you for this opportunity to visit with you, and I do think it's wonderful to be a part of the bigger pie, and the state has set a good example for us to follow and to have a unified effort in promoting Oregon for tourism.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions, Representative Butler?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's probably not a good to Todd Davidson, but I just wondered what the phase-in program was. He perhaps explained it, and I had missed it. I'm sorry.
Todd, would you like to come back up, please? And the question is, what is the phase-in program? Where is it indicated on your budget sheet here?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, maybe I can help. I think, again, what we're looking at is the highlighted column, and the phase-in is the Senate Bill 710 from last session in the Community Development Fund.
And what does that do for the department?
It doesn't do anything for the Trade Commission. That was that is funding that's being set aside for channel deepening, the Columbia Channel deepening, and for some specific projects in Southern Oregon. It's a matter of how we're reading the spreadsheet, and the spreadsheet covers all of the lottery-backed programs. And what is under discussion today is the section that's highlighted in gray.
Right, there's 13,820 included in the gray department and the gray line under tourism, and that's fine.
Well, I believe that that's state government service charge assessments that will reduce.
Oh, I'm sorry. I beg your pardon. So there is nothing on the line phase-in program.
That's correct.
I beg your pardon. Thank you very much. I apologize.
Okay. Further questions? Thank you for your presentation. Members will have before them a new updated version of our schedule. From today, we are going to be taking substantive bills, public testimony, Senator Yee has some legislation in, even with the trade office in China.
It's my hope at that point, Mr. Chair, to also have the lottery tax bond bill here.
Okay, and we'll probably go into work session. That's Thursday and carried off into Friday. Yes, Representative.
I plan to do House Bill 2089 work session tomorrow. Is it public hearing on that bill? Or?
I don't know. What is House Bill 2089?
It's the bond debt service limitation for housing.
Oh.
And I believe you have a work session on that.
Okay.
I'm scheduled to be in another committee. I probably won't get here until like 8:30.
Okay.
Maybe you don't need me.
Well, we'll try to rearrange.
Maybe you do, maybe you don't.
Okay. Thank you.
If there's nothing before us, we are adjourned and go out to the full state news committee in the morning.
Oh, that's right. We got full. We need after full.
Yeah.